Libraries have had a tough ride for a few decades in America. As local budgets got tight, libraries often got squeezed and squeezed hard. Some even closed, never to reopen. Others closed and reopened with reduced hours or reduced services or both. It has begged the question, are libraries necessary in today's world? And our next guest answers the question, yes, very loudly so. John Palfrey is the author of the book Bibliotech, Why Libraries Matter More Than Ever in the Age of Google. John Palfrey is a law professor, author, and currently the head of school at Phillips Academy in Andover, Massachusetts. John Palfrey, thanks for joining us on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you, Jeff.
So count me among the shocked. Public libraries took a while to catch on in the United States?
They did, actually. It's true. Public libraries didn't really come into being until the middle of the 19th century. So the history of libraries in this country is a great one, and actually there's lots of pioneering things. But the first libraries in the country were subscription libraries and academic libraries that were only for the wealthy. And it really was in Boston in 1852 when the Boston Public Library became the first big municipal library, public library in the country. So this idea of public libraries that are free to all, that's actually only, you know, about 150 years old in this country.
How radical was a free library then for the public in 1852?
I think it was totally radical. In fact, I should say these were probably the first in the world, too, at the scale that happened in Boston and in the Northeast. And I think the notion was it was a democratic act to make information free to all for anyone. And it was a big surprise. But people stepped forward and invested a lot of money in the city of Boston to do it. And then you get many of the other big public libraries like the New York Public by the end of the 19th century. And you get, obviously, Andrew Carnegie around that time also investing in public libraries in more than 1,600 cities and towns around the country. So there's a big boom after that, but I think it was pretty radical at the time.
And I can imagine that people flocked to the libraries to make use of their services, but was there some ridicule or revilement going on?
I don't know about any revilement, actually. Nothing like that came up in my research. I think there might be surprise that the masses really needed this knowledge. But I think there was a very strong sense, Jeffersonian, in fact, that the way to make democracies work was to have access to knowledge, and that was the wellspring of a strong democracy. So I think generally once the idea caught on and people were willing to put money into it to create the infrastructure, it became quite popular quite quickly.
And was the Boston Public Library a pretty good model for what followed thereafter, or did libraries transform quite a bit over the course of the next century or so?
Well, I think the BPL actually was a great model, the Boston Public Library, and I think a real point of pride for the city of Boston. And I think that's something that did work very well. The basic idea was to bring popular literature and the great literature of the time into a physical space and make that available for anyone, regardless of their ability to pay. And you know, I think to this day, that is ultimately the model of a public library. I think it needs to change some, but I think still it's essential that we bring knowledge to the public in a free to all manner.
Now, county libraries in our region, and I know that our region is not alone, have had a tough couple of decades. And when voters are asked to pass tax increases to fund them, you often hear from the opposition side, we don't need libraries in the age of the Internet. What do you say to that?
I say that is exactly the reason that I wrote this book, was when I became a library director. I was actually not a librarian, but was a law professor. I would go to a backyard barbecue or a cocktail party or something, and I would tell people what I was doing. And they'd say, wait, you know, you're a digital person. Like, why are you going to work in a library? And I would start to say, well, I think they're actually more important than ever when we have Google and so forth. And they'd say, oh, I get it now. You're there to shut down the library because we don't really need it now that we can just go to Google. And I think this is a very common sentiment. And part of it is I think we don't give libraries enough credit for the traditional things that they've done. But it also is that I don't think we've turned the corner and thought about the role that libraries can play relative to this digital information, too. So I think it's a very common sentiment, and I think it's actually a wrong-headed one, and that's exactly the reason I wrote this book.
So as a person who was not trained as a librarian but working in a library, why did that get you called a feral?
Oh, that's funny. Well, it was just something that some people in the library system, I think, used as their code for this. I do think that in some library settings, the idea of somebody who did not go to library school having a library director job is a little threatening, which is understandable. But I also think, as a lawyer, I mean, we obviously set up a guild to keep people who didn't train as lawyers out, so I understand the sentiment. I happen to think that it is a moment in time where people who have worked in information technology and have other skills can help, and certainly in the case of the library I was directing, there were many, many capable, appropriate, trained librarians who made the appropriate decisions, but the role that I was playing was one of really thinking about the future and the role of the digital in the context of a library. So it was there was a little tension there at the beginning, but I think resolved over time. And ultimately, to my mind, the lesson is that collaboration across different fields is actually what we need in order to make libraries as strong as they possibly could be in this digital era.
I'm still struck by the concept that people thought that you were brought in to dismantle the library. I wonder if some of the people who worked in the library thought that same thing.
I think there certainly was that fear, yes, and the fact that my previous job had been as director of a digital research center called the Berkman Center, I could understand why they would worry about that. I saw my job, in fact, was to strengthen the library and to make the best possible case for it. I think one of the challenges, of course, is libraries have one foot in the past and the previous model, and they have one foot in the future, and that's sort of an awkward straddle to kind of pull off. And in any community, I suspect it's true in the communities that your station reaches locally, there are people who wish to have all digital material, and there are people who wish to have all physical materials. And as you say, there's downward pressure on libraries at exactly that moment in terms of staffing and funding and hours and so forth. So in order to try to do both of those things and also to propel us into the future, libraries are in a tough spot.
John Palfrey is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. He is the author of Bibliotech, Why Libraries Matter More Than Ever in the Age of Google. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange at 800-838-3760 or jx@jeffnet.org. So this idea of libraries trying to be what they were in the past and at the same time trying to be what they were in the future, these are two visions that really can't be reconciled. I assume that means they need to head firmly toward the future, but what does that mean they don't do that they used to do?
I think that's a very, very hard question. And to be truthful, you know, if they could do everything they've done in the past and do everything we'd like to in the future, I'd be supportive, in the sense that I think the majority of what libraries have done in the physical analog era, as in the era of actual books, is a very good thing. But I think there's so much that needs to be done in this digital era that they inevitably need to make that shift. There's also the shift, of course, in usage patterns. And I think you never want to fight and lose a generational war. So to the extent that younger people are increasingly creating materials digitally, using materials digitally, and so forth, I think for libraries they need to shift in terms of the nostalgia that they are creating. So one of the calls I make in this book is to say the old nostalgia is great, but libraries need to focus also on the new nostalgia.
Okay, we'll have to pick that up on the other side of a break. We'll take one now. The author is John Palfrey. The book is Bibliotech, Why Libraries Matter More Than Ever in the Age of Google. Short break on the Jefferson Exchange. Back with John Palfrey and your phone calls and emails when we return. 836 on the Jefferson Exchange. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thanks for listening. We're talking about libraries in the Internet age with John Palfrey. He is the head of school at Phillips Academy in Andover, Massachusetts, and the author of a new book called Bibliotech, Why Libraries Matter More Than Ever in the Age of Google. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange at 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area, 800-838-3760. Email address is jx@jeffnet.org. So when we talk about the difference between nostalgia for what libraries were and you need to create a new nostalgia, let's explore that a little bit, John Palfrey. What kinds of bits of attachment do we need to create for libraries to make them successful as we go forward?
I think for many of us, the reason that we have such a positive view of libraries is that we have a sense of nostalgia. We have the idea maybe you were 4 or 5 years old and you walked into your first public library and you saw the world of ideas explode in front of you, and maybe it was a story hour, maybe it was going in the stacks for the first time, and that's an incredibly exciting and positive experience, and we want to make sure that kids still have that. And just to be clear, kids are going to libraries in record numbers. It's not a crisis in that sense. But increasingly, we know that young people are getting access to information at younger and younger ages in a digital environment and in different ways. And I guess my concern for libraries is that they not cling to too thin a reed, of the old nostalgia, but rather they focus also on creating some new nostalgia, things that introduce libraries into the way in which people, whether they're younger or older, get information in a digital environment as well as in the physical.
So you say kids are going to libraries in record numbers?
Absolutely. We have great, great usage of libraries, public libraries across the country. And people often think, oh, libraries are really for older people. And there's truth in that. Certainly, retired people make great use of libraries, and job seekers and new immigrants to the country and so forth. That's all true. But if you look at where the largest numbers are, actually, in the most recent studies from the Pew Research Center, each year, it's very often young people, and it's often young people coming to libraries after school. They need to do their homework, or they're required to go to a library, or they go to the library as a place to be when they don't have another safe place to go in a community. So young people actually are huge library users.
But do they necessarily make much use of the materials contained within the library, or at least to be accessed through the library?
It depends. It depends. And that's actually, I think there are great teen and tween librarians who are working in libraries, and they're doing really creative things. And, you know, in some places I visited, you know, there's less usage. They're really there for the kind of the safe space. So I think it's entirely possible. I think there are really exciting things happening in the young people sections of libraries. But it does take creativity, and it often does involve creativity that gets kids to use both digital materials and physical materials. And I think some youth libraries have found it very successful, actually, to bring back in some of the books and stacks and other things and to introduce kids into the paper way of doing things as well as the digital. And I think it's that combination that can be so successful.
So as we talk about creating libraries for the future or modifying the ones we have, I mean, does this include an optimum size for a library, as in closing little branches in small towns in favor of larger regional facilities or anything like that?
It's a wonderful question, but no, I don't think so, actually. I think that the branch libraries that are actually in communities are so crucial. I think that the kind of amount of library space that we have, whether it's in big cities or in small towns or in communities like schools or universities, I actually think library space can be very, very effectively used. And I think in our communities we need third spaces that are not home and work, but that are public third spaces, so places that people can gather that are not a Starbucks or a McDonald's, as much as I love a Starbucks coffee like others, but where you can get free Wi-Fi, where you can get access to books, where you can go hear a great speaker or somebody running for office, or you can engage in civic life in some meaningful way. I think that it is possible that parts of libraries may not be as necessary to house quite as many books. I think most librarians would tell you that there are parts of their libraries that have more physical materials than actually do circulate. And so I think to the extent that libraries do have to do less of something, I think collaborating more around collections, which happens very well in some regions and less well in others, is a good example. And that does free up space to do new kinds of activities. So I think librarians can be and are creative in that respect. But I actually don't think the answer is to close local branches by any means.
So not necessarily as much space for stuff, but it sounds like at least as much space for people to come in and do the things they need to do, even
Absolutely.
If it's on their own devices.
Absolutely. And that's why when you see a small town Carnegie library closing or being put to another use or other pressures on libraries, I think that's a mistake in communities, whether that community is a school or a town.
John Palfrey is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. His book is Bibliotech, Why Libraries Matter More Than Ever in the Age of Google. Join us on the Jefferson Exchange at 800-838-3760, anywhere around the region, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. As the head of school at Phillips, obviously this is a prep school with lots of smart kids, how do they use the library?
Oh, it's quite wonderful. We have 1,100 amazing kids. They come from all over the world, and every aspect of the socioeconomic spectrum, very diverse group of kids. The one thing that joins them really is that they are intrinsically motivated to learn, and they're extremely bright and creative, and they pack in our library. You would not believe how crowded the Oliver Wendell Holmes Library is on campus. And, you know, a lot of the inspiration I drew in writing this book was from the terrific librarians in that library, as well as the materials and the space that they have. I think one thing we often think about is that there's such vibrant spaces. The kids are in there so much, and there is some talking and doing things that adolescents do. So ensuring that there are contemplative parts of that library is important. But I think kids love a place to come and to study, and even if they're not checking books out during the visit, they're there to do studying in a social way, in essence, to be physically proximate to other kids who are studying or to work in study groups. I think the library on this campus is absolutely the beating heart of the intellectual enterprise, and I think we need to support it as much as we can.
Given that any kid in any high school right now is a digital native, I mean, these are kids who grew up with computers around them all the time, and they've probably been around smartphones since they were in single digits anyway. Have the libraries adjusted what they do to be more friendly to the devices the kids would have with them?
It's a great question. I think it's a work in progress. So I think the most forward-looking libraries are doing a brilliant job of that, and I think there are some libraries out there that are resisting it, and I think that's a mistake. So I think the idea of figuring out how do you look at the practices of learning that these kids are engaged in, which are different than they were 20 years ago or 25 years ago, and then figure out what are the great parts that we can, in fact, support and encourage, and what are the things that they're doing that are less good, and how do we protect against that? So just as an example, I think research in a digital era is somewhat harder for kids in the sense that there's so many different sources that they could go to online. Think about in the old mode of just going to the Encyclopedia Britannica and you looked up a topic and that was kind of a basically reliable source and there weren't a lot of choices. In the internet era, of course, you have Wikipedia and then you've got lots of other sources and they are sometimes reliable and sometimes they're not. Those digital media skills are very, very important to teach kids no matter what they're doing, whether they're a radio talk show host or they're a journalist of another sort or they're working in the government or they're working in the private sector. No matter what they're doing, they're going to need these skills, and that's only getting trickier. Librarians are great people to teach that, and libraries are great places to teach that.
Yeah, I'm not sure how this job would have been done before the internet, but...
Yeah. Good thing you have it.
It is, but you're right. I mean, but as somebody who's been doing things like this for 30 years plus now, it seems like it's easier for me to figure out who's the reliable source and
That's
who
right.
isn't. For somebody who doesn't know the New York Times from Politico, from Talking Points Memo, from Newsmax, I mean, how do kids figure out in the world today what the good sources are and what can libraries do to direct them?
Well, you know, I think librarians as people and as teachers are really good at that. That is what, you know, they learn in library school and iSchools, but also do every day is to sort of discern what's credible from not credible. Also teaching kids how to participate in that. What would it mean to edit a Wikipedia entry if you found it wrong, as an example? What would it mean to add to the blog debate that might have been started on Politico to correct something? I think librarians are just terrific teachers in that respect. But also, as you describe, you know, over the course of 30 years, you do get good at this by virtue of doing it in a context and having people around you who can help with that teaching, and I think it's a participatory mode. So if you think about what that then means for librarians, it's thinking about the act of going into a library as highly participatory and not so much just somebody comes in, knows that they want a book, find a call number, walk into the stacks, get it, and check it out. There's a different mode there, and particularly for young people, I think that's a real opportunity for librarians to reach out to them.
You mentioned that some libraries seem to be resisting efforts to accommodate younger people and devices. Actively so, or just by not getting on board?
Oh, I think not actively. In most cases, I think there is some fear, though, that this is a set of technologies that will undermine the role that libraries have played in communities. And I think that fear sometimes can translate into not embracing the future. And my sense for libraries generally is they need to get in front of this mob and call it a parade and actually say that, you know, this digital era can be hugely powerful for knowledge and information and be leaders of it. And I completely understand there are going to be those who were trained in a different era and for whom the digital technologies are difficult to work out and it's not obvious how to navigate that environment. But I also just totally believe in professional development and retraining and thinking, you know, taking the skills that have worked in the past. I think they will translate into this digital future.
John Palfrey, again, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, the author of Bibliotech, Why Libraries Matter More Than Ever in the Age of Google. Call us on the Jefferson Exchange with your thoughts, questions, comments, 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area, 800-838-3760. Email address is jx@jeffnet.org. Are there some things that just aren't available through Google right now, and that's what makes libraries have some level of value, things that haven't been digitized yet, John?
Well, I think there are many things that make library have value, but absolutely, I think one thing is that there are many bits of information that are extraordinarily valuable that are only available through subscription models. And so just take an example, the wonderful series of journal articles that's available for research through JSTOR. That's something that a library can subscribe to, but it's not available on the open internet for free for everybody. Certainly as we go forward in the world of ebooks, that's something where libraries can get subscriptions to ebook services of various sorts and make those available to their patrons on various different forms of bases. So as people prefer information that is in digital format, publishers are also trying to find out how to make it scarce. How do we restrict access to it? It's not as though every bit of useful information is made open access on the internet. And libraries are important mediators of that, where they take some money and they subscribe to something. They ensure that authors get paid and publishers get paid and agents get paid and editors get paid and so forth, and then make it available on a metered basis to the public. And that function is going to be hugely important in the digital age as that transition continues.
I was just thinking about the fact that you can get loans from libraries online easily, but that often you have to wait in line for it because there are a limited number of digital copies, and that is about a level of scarcity and providing a revenue stream to the creators, I assume.
That's right, and I think that's totally appropriate. I think that the idea that everything would be free on a with no payment involved, I think that would undermine the overall system that we have. That said, I think we can have very broad and public access in the digital era, just as we have in the physical era, and I think librarians can be the trusted party in between the publishers and authors on the one hand and the public on the other. And of course, many members of the public are going to buy things directly when they can't get immediate access through the public library, and that's also to the good.
John, you write of major national funding assisting libraries. Give us some examples there.
Well, I think it would be great if there were an infusion of capital. It would be wonderful if it was all public money. I actually think that libraries are a public good, and of course they're mostly funded through municipal, local funding. They also get some state funding, and they get a tiny bit of federal funding. But I think actually now would be a great time, particularly as we make this transition from the analog to the digital, to have a capital infusion, much as we did 150 years ago or so as we got the public library system going. And I think that could be through philanthropy, big foundations. I think it could be through the federal government saying this is something we are seeking to do and to digitize our materials and make digital library platforms available. And certainly other countries, particularly in Europe, have been investing very heavily in that respect, and we have not been. The one effort that I am most excited about and have been involved in is called the Digital Public Library of America, the DPLA, and that's something you can go to online at dp.la. That's an effort to create a digital public infrastructure for the country, which makes available library materials and archival materials and museum materials on a free basis. And as we digitize materials all around the country, provides a mechanism for making those available. That's something that I think should be done at a national level, so we're not recreating the wheel in thousands and thousands of small communities. So I think this is a great time to invest in libraries and to get libraries kind of over an important transitional hump, and I hope that the capital will be there.
Is there one thing that libraries are generally not doing now that you would advocate the most for them to begin doing?
That's a really great question. I think that the main thing would be to say ensure that libraries in each community are really tightly aligned with the needs of that community and to the changing habits of users. And I think many, many great librarians, do this intuitively. But I think one of the reasons that politically libraries sometimes struggle in communities is if they seem at all out of step. If you do leave yourself vulnerable to that, we have Google, why do we need you kind of critique, I think that leads to difficult funding conversations when legitimately people are trying to decide between investing in fire departments or police departments or the school system or the library. So I think being a little bit more political and aligning with community needs is part of it. And then really focusing on changing access to information, the processes of accessing information of young people and older people, and saying, are there ways that we can play a role here in the process of finding information and using information in a digital era? I think we haven't yet invested anywhere near enough in the research and development into that. You think about the most important information services in a digital era. They are Google, they're Amazon, they're Wikipedia, they might be Netflix. None of these are libraries, or none of them have been funded by libraries. None of them are actually run by libraries. And I actually think that it's very important that libraries kind of get in that mix. And whether that's done in a collaborative way across the country or it's done locally, I think either could work.
Join us on the Jefferson Exchange as we talk about libraries. John Palfrey is our guest. He's the author of Bibliotech, Why Libraries Matter More Than Ever in the Age of Google. 800-838-3760 by phone anywhere around the region. 800-838-3760. Email address is jx@jeffnet.org. John, how did your daughter's fascination with the American Girl dolls lead you to some thoughts on libraries?
Thank you for reading that part of the book. I have a 9-year-old daughter, and she is an avid reader. She is constantly reading. And she likes series, by and large, so she's read through the Harry Potter series multiple times and so forth. For a while, she was interested in the American Girl doll series, so she would get a doll as a gift. And it turns out that each of these dolls have a place in American history, so they might be, a child born in the Depression, or they might be a child born on an Indian reservation. And there are a series of books then assigned to each of these dolls, and it's a very clever strategy by the American Girl Doll Company. And one of the things that I noticed was that she would often encounter these books in an online world created for the dolls. So the basic idea would be she receives the doll for the gift. It comes with a little code saying go online to the online environment for American Girls. She would do that. She'd log in and so forth. And then she would go to the library within the context of the American Girl world, a virtual library. And in the virtual library, they would give her a little snippet from one of these books. She would read the first little snippet, and sure enough, she would then want to buy the book. She'd come to me and say, could I have $5 or whatever it was to buy the digital version of that book or a physical version? And we would do that. It was a very, very effective strategy for the doll company to sell her books. And I was delighted because she was reading, and reading is great, and wanted to support her in every possible way. But what it made me think of was the concern that the doll company could really cut libraries out of the picture. And if the people who are doing the most effective job of pulling somebody into a digital environment and then having them get their information right there with libraries nowhere in sight, I actually think that's a dangerous thing. And so we need to have a public option, and I think libraries can learn a lot from what American Girl Doll Company did in that scenario.
You talk about libraries should be in the research and development business in the digital age. In what sense?
I do. I really believe that libraries should be much more focused on R&D in this digital environment, in part because there have been so many powerful ways in which primarily for-profit companies, but others like, I'd say, Wikipedia and Mozilla as two examples, have made advances in information and knowledge retrieval, and libraries have not been in that business. And I think as we go forward, libraries need to have a result, put it that way, in the top 10 Google search results when someone's looking for something. So I was thinking it would be wonderful if for every book or every author or every musical artist or whatever the entity might be that libraries are curating, what if librarians had a way to introduce that information and to draw somebody from a Google search into a library? And it happens every once in a while. There are some online catalogs and so forth, but it happens very rarely, and I think it could be a really effective way for libraries to use a digital front door to bring people into this public option.
How much did you get into, John, the whole issue with Google digitizing so many books and an outcry from some authors and owners of works who said, hey, this shouldn't be happening?
It's a very important story. I was not directly involved, although I was working at Harvard University when Google did approach Harvard, and Harvard turned over many of its books to be digitized to Google. And on one level, I admired very much Google's effort to digitize the world of libraries. I think that is in itself a very good thing, and they got to some very important big libraries to do that. As you know, the project foundered in part when it was sued by authors and publishers both, and then the subsequent attempt to sell that lawsuit was not approved, and the Department of Justice and others had big concerns about it. And I think the concerns were, in a way, that a big company, Google in this case, as well as the publishers through a very odd mechanism that they proposed called a book rights registry, would have a huge amount of power over how people accessed these books and the pricing for it. And there were antitrust concerns and otherwise, appropriately so. And part of it really was, in the background, the idea that it would cut out libraries. It would cut out other entities that would ordinarily have a key role in making the nation's cultural and scientific and historical record available to people. So on those grounds, I was a critic of the Google Books project in that way. The effort to create a digital public library of America, the DPLA, that I just mentioned, in some respects was something that grew out of an opposition to at least a form of the Google Books project. So I think there's an effort to say we as people with a public interest in mind, as a nonprofit, seek to do something roughly similar. So I think there's a lot of good that comes out of the Google Books project. I think you can access lots of books in positive ways because they digitize so much. So in the end, I actually think the outcome is a pretty good one, and it does not result in one company playing an outside role in our access to knowledge.
So back to the beginning, the Boston Public Library, the first major public library in America, how did it update for the current age?
I think the BPL, the Boston Public Library, is doing a terrific job in this respect, and there are many libraries around the country and around the world also doing that. But I think it's really figuring out a combination between the digital and the physical. So as an example, there's a big renovation going on right now at Boston Public Library to recreate the spaces in the city center. There's a rethinking of a lot of the branch libraries in positive ways that I think connect the digital to the physical architecture. But they also have led a project called the Digital Commonwealth, which is digitizing a lot of the unique materials from Massachusetts and then making those freely available. That combination of the digital and the analog, I think, can be incredibly powerful.
So it sounds like nobody should be getting too depressed about the future of libraries. You're pretty upbeat about them.
I'm very optimistic, and I think there's tons of reason for us to lean into libraries and be hugely supportive in a digital era.
John Palfrey is the head of school at Phillips Academy in Andover, Massachusetts, and the author of Bibliotech, Why Libraries Matter More Than Ever in the Age of Google. Thanks so much for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you, Jeff.